B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
All right, Gasper Murray on this Saturday. No Big Jim. He is out. I am Tim McCone, joined alongside by, of course, Chris Gasper. Chris, just wanted to kind of reset your Celtics thoughts here on what certainly has been an unexpectedly busy week for the organization. Surprised, obviously, by the Ime Udoka news, but what do you think this means kind of for the organization, and what was your big takeaway following yesterday's press conference?
Yeah, the big takeaway for me is that this is something that's really sort of shattered the organization on a number of levels. You saw the emotion expressed by Brad Stevens when he was talking about the impact and the effect on the female employees in the Celtics organization, as you had amateur social media sleuths trying to figure out, you know, who was involved with Ime. And then from a basketball standpoint, he talked about meeting with the players and how tough those conversations were, and the idea of a team that had really galvanized behind a head coach and a leader, and that was going into the year settled and with really high expectations, is now very much unsettled. So when you look at it, it's just an absolute disaster of a scandal for the Celtics all the way around, with massive repercussions on and off the court.
Yeah, huge repercussions. And like you, I think the big takeaway too was early on when you're hearing that it was a consensual relationship and you're going, well, this doesn't really necessarily match. I think, again, we don't have all the details, but it was fair to say that there was more going on than a consensual relationship, because I don't think the organization that was poised to make a deep championship run would kind of do this to a head coach if it was just that, suspend him for a season and kind of shake up the organization like it has here over the last week, unless it was absolutely necessary and they didn't really have a choice. And I think that's kind of what the situation is here for the Boston Celtics.
And you heard Wick Rousbeck, the owner of the Celtics, talk about they brought in an outside firm to sort of investigate this, and there was an investigation. And so maybe the initial explanation from Ime was that this was consensual and that they believed that. But then when the investigation took place, it took it in a different direction where that explanation was no longer viable or plausible, and they felt like they had to act. And certainly a year suspension is a very, very significant penalty. And I don't think he ever coaches for the Celtics again. I really don't. I think it would be very difficult for them to bring him back at this point. And Wick Rousbeck and Brad Stevens repeated several times yesterday that no determination has been made about Udoka's future. I don't think that's good. That just doesn't seem like a good sign at all that they would bring him back.
No, I'm with you. I just don't see a path in which he ends up coaching another game for the Boston Celtics. Again, either they, you know, wind up having a successful season, and in that case, why are you then turning the clock back and kind of bringing this situation back to the forefront? And if this thing goes off the rails, I think they just kind of move on and wash their hands of the entire situation and just try to turn the page on what certainly has been a dark time in the organization. There's no question about it, but I think it was pretty telling, like you mentioned as well, in terms of the no decision has been made yesterday in terms of his future. I thought that was pretty telling in terms of what the organization and how they kind of feel about the situation. All right, 617-779-0985. Kevin's in New Hampshire. Kevin, what's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep. What's on your mind?
Appreciate it, Kevin.
There's two issues that I have with this Ime Udoka situation, the way it's covered right now. Number one, it's revisionist history of what happened last season. First start off, I mean, we're talking about an epic collapse in the NBA Finals. After winning game one like that, they choked. So that dovetails into point two. We're hearing all rampant speculation right now about what happened. Nobody's accounting for the fact that this is a league that is driven along by players. I believe that this was obviously some type of impropriety that happened, but I think this was a player mutiny against the coach. And there are a number of different reasons for that, from Jaylen Brown's angle. Maybe he's upset with Kevin Durant rumors. Tatum, maybe he doesn't like the system. Maybe he's upset about Rob Williams. So we can go, you know, I heard Felger and Maz yesterday talk about how, you know, they're trying to plot some middle course where, you know, they're trying to give the players the hope that he's going to come back. That is a technical impossibility in this league. If this is the type of move that could literally make Tatum request a trade this offseason. So the idea that this was done absent of the players is ridiculous. This, to me, this is my theory, this was a player mutiny.
I mean, some good points there in terms of, I don't agree with the player mutiny part of it, just because there's no proof of that. I mean, you did artfully connect some dots there, but to defend your take. But it is a great point, though. I will say this point of Kevin's I agree with. I have a hard time believing that, and I know Wick said he consulted with other members of ownership and people in the front office, but I do have a hard time believing that they didn't at some point, at least. Like, I have a hard time believing that, like, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown found out about this at the same time we did.
I don't know if they found out. Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think they found out the same time we did, but I would find it very hard to believe that they would have any say in terms of what they were going to do with Ime Udoka moving forward.
Say might be strong, but I do think Kevin raises a valid point in terms of they had to at least consider what the long-term ramifications were from a player standpoint. Like, that had to come up. Maybe that's why, again, I'm just speculating, we're all speculating here, but maybe that's why it's right, like, they're going to try and soften the blow of his eventual dismissal, or I think more likely it's they'll come to a separation agreement.
Parting, yeah.
But that happens, like, at some point during the season where maybe they've bonded with another coach, you know what I mean? And it's not as much of a blow, whereas they could have just been like, no, Ime's fired. And maybe there's sort of backlash or a mutiny by the players at that point when they're like, oh, you know, and the players might know what's going on. Oh, you're firing Ime for this?
Yeah.
It seems like it's kind of a he said, she said. And this is not me saying that, but the players might feel that way and respond that way. So I do think he raises a valid point in that they had to at least consider what the response would be from the players when they meted out the punishment.
I think that to some extent, like, there comes a point, and whatever the violation ultimately is, the Celtics clearly did not want to do this, right?
No.
You don't go into this thinking we're going to suspend the coach that just led us to the finals for the whole season, like 4 days before our media day for the following year after we just brought in two big pieces. Obviously, one of them goes down with an injury in Gallinari to make a real run at the chip. Like, this is the last thing in the world the Celtics wanted to do. And the fact that they ended up having to do it, I think, tells you how serious it was. And if that's the case, I don't know. Yes, you need to make sure that the players kind of understand the reasoning behind the situation and why there wasn't a choice in terms of doing it. But I don't think you go to it and say, hey, Tatum, are you cool with this? Because if not,
no,
then
I agree.
We can massage it,
I agree.
You know?
But you do have to make, I mean, he's right, though, about today's NBA, where you do have to make the player. What do we hear from Kyrie when he was eliminated here? Oh, Kevin and I are going to sit down with Joe Tsai and Sean Marks, and we're going to figure this out. So the players in today's NBA we're in the player empowerment era, which I, for one, like, and I think really is like 95% for the good. But there, you know, one of the issues is sort of this idea that the players do feel like, well, I'm an equal partner in this thing and should be treated as such. And I believe the Celtics, B-Rob, you can correct me or speak to this. I believe the Celtics in the past have consulted Jason Tatum on certain, you know, players that they bring in.
Of course. And coaches.
So there you go. And coaches.
By the way, I'm an equal partner until all of a sudden some of these moves don't pan out. We're not winning games, and then I want out. And then
LeBron James.
Or Kevin Durant, right?
Yeah,
we're
going to
give you everything you possibly want. And then, I'm going to walk out the door. See you later.
But I don't know what the heck the caller was talking about in terms of, like, this has nothing to do with the players from a, like, the investigation standpoint. Like, this happened, and I would imagine it would not shock me at all if they found out the same time we found out.
Really? You think so?
I think so.
Interesting. Okay.
Because I think, I don't think this was well known throughout the organization before the, you know, this did wrap up on Wednesday. Like, I do believe that, like, I actually believe, like, Wick Grosbeck said that yesterday, and I believe him from that standpoint, just from the fact of how, you know, scrambled, you know, how tough it was for the team to respond to, you know, obviously make the decision on a quick timetable that was clearly influenced in some point by all these leaks coming out.
So I'm gonna say this, and this is as much, this is as far as I'm willing to go out on a you know, sort of, you know, go out on a limb here, and it's not based on any information because I think speculation in these situations is dangerous. But I am going to say this: I think that it wasn't until July that the Celtics thought they had a real issue with this relationship. But I do find it hard to believe that that's the first time anybody in the organization knew anything about it. Two employees and you know, having some sort of relationship. Like, the first time anybody heard anything about it, like even any rumors about it, was in July. I find that difficult to believe. I do.
No, I'm with you on that.
I think that, again, the first time it became a possible issue in terms, they found out it could be an issue in terms of violations or issues, I totally believe them on that. You know, somebody brought it to their attention that this is an issue, there's violations, you know, beyond blah, blah, blah. But I have a hard time believing that nobody in the organization, and when I say organization, I mean like trainers, players,
just someone there on a day-to-day basis.
Anybody around the team that nobody had any idea that this was alleged, you know, situation was going on. And I think that people probably were under the assumption, okay, this is happening, it's a consensual thing, there's no issues with it, and then come to find out that there are major issues with it.
617-779-0985 is the telephone number. See you guys lined up. There's also two open phone lines if you want to jump in. We're going to get to your phone calls after this.
Chris Gasper, Big Jim Murray, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Sounds like fact, not opinion to me.
This is Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back here at 98.5, The Sports Hub. Tim McCone, Chris Gasper with you on this Saturday, talking Celtics with you. 617-779-0985, the telephone number. Chris in Chelmsford has been hanging on a long time. Chris, what's up?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Oh, I have one interesting question. If the Celtics getting an assistant coach, will this be the first time that an assistant coach has taken any other team, to the finals and the championship?
Hmm. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, I find that hard to believe. I honestly don't know the answer.
I would say, what was that show, Stump the Schwab or whatever?
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure on that. Let me ask you this question, though, Chris.
Yes.
When it comes to Joe Mazzulla, number one, the fact that Emeka Udoka no longer is the coach.
Wait, hold on a second. Wasn't Nick Nurse? Didn't Nick Nurse take over? But it wasn't the first. Was it the first year?
I don't think
that was his first year.
It was his first year?
Yep. I believe so. I'll look, double check that, but
I'm looking it up now. That's just, I'm just trying to think off the top of my head, like Nick Nurse. Yeah, it was his first year. He was an assistant coach the year before he took over, and he 2018-19. Now obviously they got Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, that helps a little bit, right?
Yeah, that helped a little bit. Yeah. But
he had nothing to do with it.
So the answer is yes. Yeah. Nick Nurse.
This was a Nick Nurse show.
It. Yeah. Oh, we have a home run in the Red Sox Yankees game.
Not
the one
Judge.
Maybe you're looking for.
Yeah.
But it's Gleyber Torres.
There you go.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the same juice as an Aaron Judge home run, unfortunately.
No.
The Joe Mazzulla, the drop-off, do you think that vastly changes the outlook in terms of championship hopes for the Boston Celtics, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, it does, because I think there's going to be, you know, there's going to be some growing pains for him. There'd be growing pains for any coach. I thought there were growing pains for Brad in his first year as a head coach. And that's why I think that you're better off going with somebody like Brad Stevens here just for 1 year, just to put this team that he's built in the best position possible to contend for a championship, where the guys, it's just one less thing that the players have to be concerned about or worried about. Is our coach up to snuff? Is he going to put us in the best position to succeed for a championship? And I know people, the argument on Felger Maz yesterday was, hey, you know, Brad's not the coach anymore because they tuned him out and they needed a change in voice. And I want to bring B-Rob in on that because he might know more about that than I do. My opinion is that it was less that and more that Brad got burnt out after three really tough seasons in a row, the Kyrie season, the pandemic, playoff bubble, and a 36-36 slog in which Jaylen Brown got hurt at the end and Kemba Walker's knee was cooked, and so was the team. But I don't know, B-Rob, you know, how much tune-out factor was there with Brad at the end, and how much did that play into the decision of him bumping up to the front office?
Yeah, I think you nailed it in what you talked about in terms of the burnout factor. And this is something that, for people that knew Brad, they weren't surprised that he stepped away from a coaching standpoint, or at least jumped at the opportunity to move upstairs in this situation for a variety of reasons. But yeah, there's no question that the tune-out factor was a topic of debate a lot that season, just based on how the team played. I think, honestly, it was more based on the personnel of that team, mm-hmm. just not working well, and Kemba's situation and other underlying factors more than the potential, what Brad's actual impact was on that team. But there's no question that, you know, a fresh voice last season got the best out of a lot of these guys. So you wonder from that standpoint if that trend could continue here with Mazzulla, who has been around for a few years, but obviously has never been the guy.
And I'll just say, for Brad, here's what I think the difference would be for people who believe in the tune-out factor. There's one key difference. Now, if you tune him out, he can ship you out because he's president of basketball operations.
Right.
So now it's like the boss, the big boss,
yeah.
is like right in your face if he were to coach.
Yes.
So you want to tune him out? See ya. You're gone. And so I think if that were an issue in the past, and I think it's been overstated or overplayed, I don't think it would have been this time, which is why I think he should have taken the reins just for stability's sake.
And the track record of the coach and president of basketball operations in recent years has been quite poor. We know Pat Riley did it well, you know, back 15, 20 years ago, but you look at what Doc, Stan Van Gundy,
so yeah,
Tibbs.
In fairness, though, those are guys coming in, though, trying to establish something versus this is kind of ready-made.
Yeah, he's already built his roster.
Yeah.
The roster's, like, ready to roll.
And this is a pretty dire circumstances of being, like, 4 days before training camp.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't know. You'd know better than I would, B-Rob. I don't know about those other front offices, but I have a lot of faith in the Celtics front office that, you know, if Brad has to step away from some of the day-to-day, they have very capable people there.
Also true. This was the transition there would have been very smooth. I have no doubt about that in terms of having highly capable people be able to handle the brunt of the job if Brad solely wanted to focus on the coaching. So maybe it was just a matter of Brad didn't want to give that up.
That's what too. I think it is. I think once you have the different lifestyle, It's hard to go back.
Oh, my God, absolutely.
Right?
Just from a lifestyle standpoint, being in the front office would be leaps and bounds better than being a head coach. There's no question about that.
I mean, 100%. It's like having to do a show with Felger as the host. That's head coaching. And then having to do a show where McCone's the host. That's like being president of basketball operations. It's a much easier lifestyle, you know?
No.
I'm not as on edge. I'm enjoying myself. I feel like I have better work-life balance, you know.
Oh, man. 617-779-0985, the telephone number. I'll say this, too, like in terms of statement. I have more faith in Brad than some of those other guys. If he decides to buy on like $180 million of a one-legged Blake Griffin, then I'll have concerns like Stan did there in Detroit. But otherwise, I think Brad Stevens has a little more is a little more with it than Stan.
And just connecting the dots, you know who else wanted a one-legged Blake Griffin? Mike Felger advocated for him on many an occasion, saying that he should be a Celtic.
It will be interesting, though, when you kind of talk about Joe Mazzulla and the role that he's stepping into. Obviously, we know that this is not an ideal situation in terms of your first head coaching position. But I do think, and we touched on this in the first hour, getting off to a hot start and getting off to a good start with Joe Mazzulla is absolutely critical, because we've seen in the past year how some of this stuff can just kind of snowball in terms of a season kind of getting away from you. And so I think that if Celtics can win some games early on, and it's not going to be easy when you got a guy like Robert Williams now shut down for the beginning of the season, But I think that it's an important part and a lot more important than what it was just a few days ago for the Boston Celtics.
I think it's a great point that you raised, and it's your point, and I think you've eloquently articulated it. Yeah, absolutely. I think that it's important for them to build confidence early on in the coach and the coaching staff and what the messaging is and what the strategy is. I think all of that is very important. And I also feel like, remember, these guys talked about this towards the end of the Golden State series and also after the season. They didn't want the next season to be as much of a grind. They felt like being 50-50 and then having to absolutely like turn it on.
Yeah, just pedal to the metal.
Yeah, and go, you know, pedal to the metal. That hurt them at the end, that they ran out of gas a little bit, and they didn't want to have to do that. Well, if you don't want to have to do that, then you have to get off to a better start, and you have to get off to a good start.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. It's Tim McCullough and Chris Gasper here with you on this Saturday. Going to continue the Celtics talk, also mix in some Patriots. I see you guys on the lines wanting to talk Pats Ravens. We'll get to that on the other side, and plus we'll keep you updated on what's going on in the Bronx as Aaron Judge continues to try to chase.
Oh, we're
going to
do that
because home runs.
Because Murray would tell you to just check your phone.
Okay,
yeah. If you want to know if Aaron Judge homered, Murray would say check your phone.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We can do that. You know what? Yeah. Just check your phone. You know what? We're done. We're done with the Bronx updates from now on. It's Pats and it's Celtics moving forward in your phone calls after this.
That's an aberration, which I freely admit.
It's Gasper and Murray.
I'm drunk. You're gross. Let's go.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is Chris Gasper.
I'm not the one who's red-faced and ranting, so who's the baby?
And Big Jim Murray.
Takes in your face, sports.
Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Tim McCullough, Chris Gasper here with you on this Saturday, 617-779-0985, the telephone number. Going to go back to the phone calls. Obviously, Patriots, Celtics, it's all on the table. Let's go to Tony, who's in Cranston. Tony, what's up?
Hey, boys, how you doing?
How's
good,
it going,
Tony? How are you?
Good. Hey, I saw a crazy stat that Lamar's got 89% of the yardage. He's responsible for 89% of the Ravens. With Duggar kind of banged up, if he plays, he's going to not be 100%. Who would you have spying Lamar? Jonathan Jones? The Green Goblin? Who would you put on him?
Yeah, we talked about this a little earlier. I think Jabril Peppers would be one candidate based on his athleticism, ability to play close to the box, sort of jack-of-all-trades guy. I also think that maybe there's an outside-the-box solution, somebody like the rookie Marcus Jones, who can absolutely fly. He's a 4-3 guy, and you definitely need some speed there. But you also, look, it doesn't help you if you're really fast if you get to Lamar Jackson and then you can't tackle him.
Yeah.
So I don't know how good the rookies' tackling skills are or how good they feel about that, but Belichick's very creative, and if he wanted to have a creative solution, if Duggar can't go, then maybe you do put a guy like Marcus Jones in there if they like his tackling skills. And normally when the Patriots draft a corner, they do sort of vet those tackling skills. That tends to be something that they value more than other teams in corners. There are some corners that teams will take that make what Deion Sanders used to call business decisions when it comes to tackling, which is basically, I'm not going to, you know, get in this guy's way.
Yeah.
But the Patriots want guys who can tackle, who can run force. So if Jones can do that, that would maybe be an outside-the-box solution.
You know, it's interesting. You brought this up earlier, too, in just terms of the corners with the Patriots. And now, you know, J.C. Jackson walks out the door, gets the monster contract from the Chargers, and it doesn't feel like you've missed him so far this season. Have you been surprised at the fact that they've been able to kind of move on here at the cornerback position without that true kind of number one guy so far, and that Jalen Mills has done a nice job early on, but I don't think any of us consider him a true number one corner in the NFL. Are you surprised that they've kind of been able to transition without having that lockdown guy for the first time since, what did I say, 2012 is when Talib walked in the
door? Yeah, you gave the succession there, which was really impressive. I am a little surprised. I thought they would miss him more to this point, and particularly when you took into account some of the wide receiving cores that they had faced. Maybe we'll see if it is something that bites them this week against Lamar Jackson. It's probably the best combination of quarterback and wide receiver talent they've played yet. They've played teams with more wide receiver talent, but I think the quarterback hasn't been as good. I'm just looking at this note right now. I just happen to be looking at the Ravens game notes. And it says top speeds reached by wide receivers Devin Duvernay and Rashad Bateman, 21.6 and 21.5 miles per hour, according to NFL Next Gen stats. Those are the fastest speeds recorded by any NFL ball carriers this season. So Lamar Jackson has a cannon. He can buy time. These guys obviously can really run. Maybe this is the week they miss J.C. Jackson, but you have to give them a lot of credit because that's one area. Even going back to preseason and training camp, it hasn't stood out as sort of the flashing red light of danger that I thought it would.
Right, like the 2011, 2010 Patriots, right? When you're desperately going, can we get anybody here that can cover? And obviously it was a problem back then, and so far this season it hasn't been. Is a game like today one of the reasons, though, that they kind of revamped this defense and went with a faster group? You know, obviously remaking the linebacking core and moving on from those veterans that obviously had big names but were slower and kind of plotting linebackers versus what you're kind of seeing right now. Like, isn't this Ravens matchup one of the reasons why they've transitioned on that side of the ball?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it is. You do need some more speed on the field, and that's something that has hurt them obviously at times over the years. And I think that's really the way that teams the last couple of years have tried to exploit the Patriots. I think they try to attack them with speed, both horizontally and vertically. And there are times that the Patriots have had issues with that. I mean, the Jalen Waddle touchdown, he sort of outran the angle there. So there's no question that if you can have more speed in the back end, it's going to help you, particularly in today's NFL, which is, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a lot like college football. It resembles basketball on grass.
Offensively, what are you looking for from the team? Do you want to see more Kendrick Bourne on the field? Again, what was it? Two snaps week one.
Yes.
One was for a 40-plus yard bomb, and then it felt like every time he was out there, or at least the catches that he made, it was one of the few guys that it felt like made impact plays for Mac Jones in the passing game. Devontae Parker obviously getting the lion's share of snaps at wide receiver along with Jacoby Myers, but do you think this is finally the week that we could see more Kendrick Bourne out there for the Patriots?
Yeah, I think you could if Jacoby Myers is hampered, not able to go at all, or he needs to be on sort of a pitch count. I mean, he was wearing a knee brace in the season opener in Miami. So this knee injury, it's something that's been going on for a little while. It feels like something he's been dealing with for a little while. It could open the door for Kendrick Bourne to reassert himself in a wide receiver role for this team and in a role where he's a featured guy. And I think that could benefit them in the long run.
I'm with you, by the way. Look, I think that it's one of those situations where it felt like, except for the one time on that third down when Jacoby Myers was wide open and they tried to force it to Jonnu Smith, it feels like Mac Jones, to some extent, does get locked in on Jacoby Myers, and maybe it's addition by subtraction just in terms of getting some of these other guys involved. I'd also like to see the two tight ends, specifically Hunter Henry, get a little bit more involved this week than what they have been to start the season, because both of those guys have been relatively quiet here to start
the year. It is strange. I mean, it's interesting because when you think about it and you look at it, right, they said we're streamlining this offense, we're changing this offense to get the most out of the guys we signed who struggled.
Yeah.
Nelson Agholor and Jonnu Smith. But the idea was to get the most out of them in addition to what you got out of Kendrick Bourne and Hunter Henry.
Right.
Not in replacement of that. And that's sort of what has happened. It feels like, well, they've made these changes now to make it easier for Agholor and Jonnu Smith, but in the process, they've kind of lost what made Hunter Henry and Kendrick Bourne effective. And I do think it's interesting. I'll just raise this point, too, because you raised it earlier. And I actually didn't see that Mike Giardi report. Was it before the game last week?
Yeah, it hit about like 12:30-ish. Okay. And it was just talking about where the Patriots stood with the offense. And Jacoby Myers kind of said, sometimes I wonder kind of what we're doing out there.
Okay, so I think it's interesting. You have Jacoby Myers saying that. I feel like if you read between the lines and follow the verbal breadcrumbs from Mac Jones, he said some variation of that. I have it on good authority that Kendrick Bourne has expressed at some point some reservations about the changes on offense. So those are three pretty good offensive players and three guys that are basically saying, like, I don't know if we really know what we're doing or we're doing it right. Isn't that a major red flag?
Yes, that's a major red flag. You know what else is? One sustained touchdown drive in the first two games of the season. That's also one something that should leave you scratching your head a little bit because, again, Chris, you brought this point up earlier. I think it's such a good point. Coming into this year, it wasn't a huge offseason like you had 2 years ago when you bring all these free agents. No, it was just kind of you lost J.C. Jackson. You kind of revamped the linebacking core on defense. But offensively, the big gains were really built around Mac Jones taking that next step this season. And this year, you have not seen that so far in the first two games. And to your point, too, yes, some of that absolutely probably is on the coaching staff, Matt Patricia, Joe Judge in, and Josh McDaniels being out, no doubt. But in terms of just on the field, I haven't seen a major leap in going, all right, Mac Jones has taken that next step. And that's in terms of banking on that to close the gap between you and the elite teams in the AFC, that just hasn't happened so far.
No, it hasn't. And again, when you look at it, how much of that is that he's being held back by the offensive coaching? And that's a real concern. That's a real concern, I think, if you're the Patriots, if you're ownership. Do we have the right people in place to get the most out of Mac Jones? You know, at its core, at its simplest, the job of a coach, of any coach, is to put his players or her players in a position to succeed. That's basically the job. You know, I have to get the most out of these players. I have to put them in positions where I maximize their strengths and minimize their weaknesses. Bill Belichick has always been great at that, but in empowering Joe Judge and Matt Patricia to basically be in charge of Mac Jones, mostly because Bill spent a lot of time with Mac Jones and Joe Judge on one knee last week in Pittsburgh, which we haven't talked about. I thought that was a very interesting development. I mean, to the point, I saw it with my own eyes through the binoculars, to the point that he definitely barely caught like third down plays for the defense. Like, turned around just in time to see what happened on the play. So maybe there's some concern on his part about entrusting Mac Jones to those two guys. Because, as we've said, this team's success, both this season and in the long term, is tied to the maturation and evolution of Mac Jones.
All right, 617-779-0985, the telephone number. Finish up with your phone calls, thoughts on the Patriots, the Celtics, and close things out with five questions with Chris Gasper next.
This is Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Chris Gasper.
Oh my God.
Big Jim Murray.
Give me fuel, give me fire.
Give me that which I desire.
It's Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back here at 98.5 Sports Up, Tim McCone, Chris Gasper, wrapping things up on this Saturday. Coming up next, by the way, Matt McCarthy, Leroy Irvin going to be with you from 2 to 5. Those guys will have you covered throughout the afternoon, talking plenty of Celtics and Patriots like we were, I'm sure, as well. I think we have Aaron Judge coming up here. Again, I know I'm supposed to save. No, definitely not Aaron Judge. So I don't know.
No, we're a little bit. I think we might be one batter away. Is this Higashioka?
Yeah, so one away. two outs. Yeah. So I don't know if we're going to get an Aaron Judge at bat this inning or not. We'll but see. There you go. We were just talking off the air about some of the records that still get you excited. Like I said, 56. McCarthy brought up 400.
Yeah, that was great.
400's a good one. Yeah, 400.
It's amazing those two things happen the same year.
Right? You've got those two, and then others, like a 100-point game in the NBA. I don't think I'll ever see it, so, but that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I would say a 100-point game in the NBA, which I agree you won't see, and also somebody averaging 50 points per game in a season, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, you're not even 40. Like, even somebody averaging it's 40 just, yeah, would be incredible.
I don't think there are any of those individual records in football. To me, and for football, the big one is the undefeated season. Can someone actually pull that off?
Yeah,
but I don't know if there's an individual, like, you know, the touchdown record that Brady set now has been, what, Manning and Mahomes have both passed. And I think the game's changed so much that I don't necessarily think those kind of hold the same amount of water.
You know what was a record that it's, and it's not I guess it technically was a record, but for a big one for me was – before it happened with Russell Westbrook was Oscar Robertson averaging a triple-double for a season.
Yep.
That was like one I thought I'd never see in my lifetime. And so to see that was pretty cool. I still get pretty geeked up about, again, not a record. It's more of an accomplishment, but the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
And again, no one's talking about Judge. I mean, he could win the Triple Crown here.
Right. On top of, on top of 62 home runs or whatever.
He started
it is.
The day as the Triple Crown, as the leader in all the Triple Crown categories, you know, if you still care about batting average and RBI and, you know, those stats.
There you go. All right, quickly, Adam Schefter just tweeting this out, by the way. Chris Godwin, Akeem Hicks going to be out. Julio Jones considered questionable. But again, they also activated Cole Beasley for that Bucks game there, too. So Brady has a new weapon to play with.
I have to work tomorrow, but I know we'll both be watching that one, you know.
Yes.
Pulling for Brady.
I'll say this.
Yeah.
I'll watch the Pats all season long, obviously. It is a lot harder to watch the Patriots now than it was a few years ago. Offensively, it's a bit of a slog. I don't know if you picked up on that, Chris, but yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's, it's tough
sledding
sometimes.
Someone who covers the games and travel to Pittsburgh. Yeah, it's a little different than during the Brady era, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Time now for 5 questions with Chris Gasper.
I got 5 questions from Chris Gasper of the Globe. I got 5 questions that got nothing to do with sports. I got 5 questions.
5! 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. I got 5 questions. I hope this segment ain't too wild.
All right, 5 questions. I think for the first time ever, I've actually timed this out properly, Chris. So we should be right on schedule. We'll start with this. I'm in today because Jim Murray is gone. He is at a wedding. So first question, your thoughts on destination weddings?
Destination weddings, I'm not a huge fan of destination weddings just because I think, you know, it's you're asking a lot of people to go to a place. They have to spend the money for them. And it's also sort of just if you're getting married, you don't have some of the issues, or I should say you might have some issues that you wouldn't have if you were in a place that was, say, like driving distance. You know, you just like the support system isn't quite the same. I'm not a huge destination wedding person.
I've done a couple destination weddings. They are fun, but you're 100% right. They are different, and logistically they can be a bit of a hassle. There's no doubt about that. All right. Yesterday really felt like the first day of fall. It got cold fast. Your favorite season, Chris?
Fall. Fall is my favorite season. Part of it's because my birthday falls there. But you know what it really is in typical Chris Gasper fashion? Fall has the best clothes. It's the best clothes.
I did walk right into that. Yeah, no question.
Fall has the best clothes. The fall clothes to me are the best. You know, it's not stuff that's like super heavy, super puffy, but you can do a lot of stuff. It's like, oh, you can wear like a suede jacket. You know, you can wear, you know, like suede, you know, boots. There's stuff you can do. I like the colors, kind of the earth tones. Fall has the best clothes. I like fall.
As you look across the table, you can tell that I am not a fashion guy based on what I'm
wearing
right now.
No, that's a
fashionable
hoodie.
So
we have like similar hoodies
on. Yeah, so you know, like the fall thing, the fashion doesn't. I'm just very basic. Just give me the summer. Yeah, warm weather. That's all I need. Speaking of the fall. Are you a pumpkin guy? Pumpkin flavored? You buy into all of it?
Not all of it, but I do like pumpkin flavor. I'll tell you, I'm not a big drinker by any means, and I'm definitely not a big beer drinker, but I do love the Shipyard pumpkin with the cinnamon sugar rim. I'm down for that all day.
I'm very bad. Look, yeah, give me all the pumpkin possible. I'll eat all of it. I'll drink all of it. I'm all in on it.
Yeah, so 100%. We're both pretty basic when it comes to the pumpkin.
Yes. All right, next up, this is a bit of a personal question from me.
Yes.
Antonio Brown was supposed to take the stage in Worcester on Thursday night. Was supposed to have a rap concert in Worcester.
Yep.
He did not make it out of Miami. Also, if you look at the screenshot of the flight, the doors open for this concert, Chris, at 8 o'clock. It's supposed to go from 8 to 2 o'clock. There's a DJ. If you look at the delayed flight, he was leaving Miami at 7:47. He was leaving Miami 10 minutes before the doors actually opened for the concert. What? So I'm trying to figure out how the math worked. He was going to land at Logan, I think it was at like 11:40, and then somehow get to Worcester to close. I think he was going to be there for 7 minutes before it actually shut down. So I'm not sure how the math there was going to work out for Antonio Brown, but he ended up blowing off his concert that was scheduled for Worcester. So I'll ask you this. Worst concert you have ever been to?
Oh, worst concert I've ever been to. I'm not a big concert person. I think I've been kind of fortunate that all of the concerts I've gone to have been pretty good. But I've went to a concert in Worcester at the Centrum when I was a kid. And I remember I was in high school. I was really disappointed because Faith Evans was supposed to show up at the concert. And she didn't. Now, granted, this was like the heyday of Bad Boy. Biggie showed up.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't Bad Boy, but Jodeci was on the show. Naughty by Nature was there. Loonies, who, you know, this is their track we use for Five Questions. Yep. They were there. But I was like really disappointed that Faith Evans didn't show up.
For me, it was freshman year of college. Ludacris just showed up. I think it was like 2 hours late. I don't even remember if we ended up staying or not for it, but it was tough. That was that was our spring concert there. In college, and it did not go as planned. All right, final one. This is kind of sports related ish, I guess. But you were just in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Your favorite, and I know you've been to a ton of them. So your favorite NFL stadium?
It has to be. It used to be Heinz Field. Now it's Acrisure Stadium. That's my favorite because of the location. It's downtown. It's on the confluence. You can walk to it. It was a beautiful half-hour walk to the stadium. There's fans who are walking with you, so you see like a parade of Steelers fans come in. It almost has like a college feel to it because they're all wearing the jerseys. It's loud. It doesn't look like other stadiums. It doesn't have like a cookie-cutter vibe to it. That's my favorite stadium in the league.
I do like, I haven't been to a ton of them, but the fact that like Nashville's is at the bottom of Broadway and you can just kind of walk to it, similar to like what you're talking about.
Sure,
I think it's really
cool. It looks like an Erect-A-Set stadium.
Yeah, no, 100%.
It looks like a stadium you buy in a box. And yes. It's like some assembly required.
Have you ever been to Lambeau?
I have been to Lambeau. So Lambeau would probably be second for me.
Really?
And I'm going there next week. Lambeau is incredible. It's amazing. It's just that Green Bay is a really nice town. It's quaint, but it's not the same vibe as being in like the downtown of a city that you get with Pittsburgh.
The crazy thing you always tell me too is that your favorite Super Bowl was Indy, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
That's wild.
Because it was so easy.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even have to go outside for. They have all the skywalks that connect the hotels.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to go to the Patriots availability, I would just like walk through the skywalk through my hotel. It was so, everything was so convenient, and the weather was unseasonably warm that week. So that was a great Super Bowl.
Love it. All right, that wraps up Five Questions. Chris, thanks for hanging out on this Saturday. Appreciate it. Fun as always.
Oh, absolutely, McCone. Great job.
B-Rob, thanks for your help today. Appreciate it. That's going to do it for us. Up next, it is Leroy Irvin and Matt McCarthy here on 98.5 The Sports Up.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.